It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's start to get ready for this game on Sunday. We'll continue to do that throughout the week. Vikings and Texans, I don't think people had this on the drawing board at the beginning of the year, that this would be a couple of 2-0 teams. The Texans and the Vikings. Texans a small favorite in this game. The highest ranking I've seen, the highest opinion I've seen of any national outlet out there on the Houston Texans, ironically, is from somebody who just about 18 months ago thought they had a weird owner and did not like the fact that they only wanted to do a Zoom call with his friend Sean Payton. Listen to old Colin Cowherd right here.
Number two.
I buy the Texans. I didn't even think they played well against Chicago. They're young, and I could see them getting to the AFC Championship and making a silly play and losing to Kansas City. CJ Stroud is insane. That kid is the most effortlessly accurate guy outside of maybe Burrow and Mahomes in the league. Nico Collins, his size. And they're comparing him to Andre Johnson. They got multiple weapons, a great left tackle, the quarterback, the coach, the culture, the defense right now, a lot of sacks. Again, Chargers, Texans, I buy.
Okay.
Saints, I kind of buy.
Okay.
Steelers at 2-0, don't make the hierarchy.
Couple things we need to brace ourselves for. One we need to brace ourselves for. We know that C.J. Stroud's comp was Jared Goff. Nico gets brought up, the comp is going to be Andre Johnson. That's going to happen.
Okay. The comp is Andre Johnson. Chris Collinsworth told me so.
Yep. The other thing that's funny about that take by Cowherd is when he said, I think it was a backhanded compliment where he said, I could see them getting to the AFC title game and making a silly mistake and losing to Kansas City.
Yeah.
Which I think the crux of what he's saying there is they're the second best team in the AFC in his mind right now. The ironic thing is, I feel like if it's a close game late, the Texans have been really good in those situations. Like, I don't feel like they would make a stupid mistake in that situation, you know?
I don't think. And the other ironic part about that is that somewhere along the way, without anybody really noticing it, Andy Reid went from being one of the guys who is most notorious for making stupid decisions in game management to now it's not even a talking point. I can't remember anybody saying, like, well, who knows how Andy Reid will operate in this moment. It helps a lot when you've got a really good quarterback, turns out.
Yeah.
It helps a lot when you're not actually propping up Donovan McNabb, who doesn't know the overtime rules, versus a guy like Pat Mahomes.
Yep.
I guess that matters. So, likewise, the Texans, who really, I still think I could count the number of game management errors on one hand that the Texans coaching staff, very young coaching staff, has had. And one of those would include just a weird botch situation in that Indy game, which I still think the referee probably didn't explain the situation properly to CJ Stroud at the end of the first half. So as far as making a mistake or something to lose that game, I think I understand where he's saying in that game where when Coward says, I don't think the Texans played that well, it's more that they played well, but they kept shooting themselves in the foot with these stupid errors and penalties. That's penalties specifically, both on offense and defense. That's the part where the playoff savvy of the Kansas City Chiefs. Like we do with the Astros, you see teams that don't have that same level of playoff experience make mistakes like that. That'll be, yeah, if we are fortunate enough to be in the position of watching the Texans take on the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game, that'll be an annoyingly big talking point that week, is just the playoff experience versus all these young guys for the Texans.
Yeah, and you know that even though there's very few guys still around from 2019, that if they play the Chiefs in Kansas City, the 2019 playoff game is going to get brought up. It's 24-0 game.
It's the fun thing about watching the Chiefs, if they're not playing your team, is that there is never a single moment in the game where you feel just that the Chiefs can't come back with it. You know, that's the way it was with Tom Brady always. I was tired on so many Tuesday mornings because even if the Patriots were down by 21 at the half on a Monday night football game, I'm like, well, I can't go to sleep because this might be an all-time historic comeback. That's I got to watch this.
Yep.
And that's where Pat Mahomes is right now.
Yep. What does Cowherd think of the Texans' opponent this weekend? Where are they in your hierarchy, Colin?
Number six.
The Vikings. I don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, they lead the NFL with 11 sacks. I don't think that's going to last over the course of a season. But they are 9-0 under this head coach, Kevin O'Connell, when they tie or win the turnover battle. So, I mean, he's cleaned up Sam Darnold significantly. That's what he does. He is the quarterback whisperer, the tall Sean McVay. Sam Darnold, I mean, even the Fred Warner interception. Fred Warner's the best linebacker in football. How many other linebackers get that ball? I mean, Darnold led a game-winning, clinching drive without Jefferson, Addison, and T.J. Hawkinson. I think we may have the best young coach in football in Minnesota. I have the Vikings at six.
The tall Sean McVay.
I hadn't heard that one. That's the first time
I've
heard that.
it's interesting, though, too, because O'Connell gets lumped into that McVay tree, whereas he had been a lot of other places before he got to the Rams.
Yeah.
But I think that system and that scheme, kind of like Stefanski in Cleveland. Stefanski had been with other people, had other influences, but he spent a couple of years with Gary Kubiak, and all of a sudden Stefanski's he's a Kubiak-Shanahan guy because there's things about that scheme that just flat-out work.
Yeah.
People become true believers really quickly, but it is relevant in that we've seen this over and over again. Mediocre or disappointing quarterbacks, when they really latch on to this West Coast scheme and execute it properly, can become the best version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Matt Schaub or Sage Rosenfels or anybody. I mean, the story of Sage, obviously people immediately go to the Rosencopter, but Sage had his best years in the NFL playing for Gary Kubiak.
Yes.
They Kubiak and Shanahan and their disciples do a really good job of getting the most out of quarterbacks. Hey, real quick, note on Sage Rosenfels.
Yeah.
Sage and Drew Hodgdon, two former Texans teammates of mine, they're coaching a small Catholic school up in Austin, and they installed the Kubiak offense.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch up with Drew about how they did this weekend, but I know it's so much different than anything most high schools are running this year. That Drew said in their first game, it was like they had nine defensive players biting on bad fakes because they don't know what – they've never seen a QB under center running old school play action and everything. And when executed properly, no can defend.
Or when executed even just okay, it sounds like.
Depending
on the opponent, no can defend.
So I know Wade Smith has installed the Kubiak scheme with his youth league teams and everything. Some of these former – it's not – the Kubiak coaching tree extends far beyond just the NFL.
Right.
Youth leagues and small Catholic football school leagues are also – either utilizing or becoming victims of the Kubiak team.
That's funny. That is really funny. These two defenses in this game, they rank a stat called Havoc, and it's basically the percentage of negative plays that you create as a defense. Forced fumbles, interceptions, pressuring the quarterback, TFLs or tackles for no gain, pass breakups, you know, basically anything where the opposing offensive coordinator is like, why did they do this again? These two teams, the Texans and the Vikings, have created the most havoc of any defense this year by those metrics. The Texans, 56% of the time, over half the snaps, and Minnesota, 54% of the time. Their defenses have forced opposing offenses into super negative plays. Not just, you know, 2-yard gains, but like tackles in the backfield, pass breakups, things like that.
So. It's look, you never want to read too much into things 2 weeks into the season. Matchups matter a lot. Obviously, the Vikings have faced at least one more formidable offense than the Texans have faced. The Texans have faced a couple of really non-quarterbacks so far. They faced Anthony Richardson, who's not a quarterback. He can't complete 50% of his passes in the modern NFL. And they faced a rookie in Caleb Williams, who looked very much like a rookie. So I don't want to read too much into the fact that the Texans blitzed Caleb Williams as much as they did or anything like that. I do think, though, that they showed – what the Texans really showed in that game versus the Bears was that they have the physical ability now to play different styles of defense. I think there's going to be some games, like it was in the Colts game, where the Texans played a very conservative style and blitzed hardly at all. They had the third lowest blitz rate in the league in week one. And then they went to extremely blitz heavy in week two. In any given week, I don't know if you're going to be able to. I don't know if you can predict exactly what it's going to look like. But the fact that they can do both is a lot better than what they had last year.
This game feels like it goes back more towards normal with a veteran quarterback back there this weekend for the Texans as far as blitzing goes. Is that fair to say? If you had to predict,
I think so. Yeah. I think D'Amico in a lot of ways will feel like he's been doing this in practice and in games for several years now, both in San Francisco and here, going against guys that run a lot of the same concepts and everything. So I think they'll blitz. I think D'Amico is going to blitz a lot more in general this year over the next 15 games than he did last year.
Yeah.
But it's going to be very much it's not a game plan by game plan thing. It's a game flow thing.
Yeah.
Whether he feels like he's going to wait until he feels like he needs to or should dial it up, and then that's when he releases the hounds.
Texter says, I worked with this Texter is a high school football coach. He said, I worked with the Bears O line coach at Copperas Cove when he was a measly high school coach. A poor bastard is on the hot seat up there right now. My 3A O-line job is secure. Who made better choices? LOL. That's very funny.
I'll tell you what. There's an element of cronyism in NFL assistant coaching.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say anything about the Bears O-line coach. I really don't know anything about him at all. But in general, there are guys who really are not good position coaches whatsoever that end up getting a very nice NFL coaching pension. The NFL coaching pension is really nice, but if they can attach themselves to the right people, they end up and sometimes it's for the weird. There was a coach with the Texans at one point who coached a long time in the NFL, and he honestly, Sean, he might be one of the dumbest human beings I've ever met in my entire life in any job, like in any capacity.
He was there when you were a player. He was at the
Texans. Yeah. And I mean, to the point where the guys that played for him just could not, like, it was every day they'd have to go in and resist laughing out loud in his face because he was that bad. And he coached a long time because there was a head coach that really liked him.
Yeah.
And it was the guy, I don't know what he did to earn his money, but man, there was secrets from going back to college or something.
I feel like there's guys like that on almost every staff, you know? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, I know. And they make a few hundred thousand dollars a year, you know?
And the pension, dude. Like you said, the pension.
Oh, yeah, so the pension for NFL coaches, it's hard to get because think about – I don't know if it's 20 years or 25 years. That's hard to be an assistant coach in the NFL for that long with how much turnover there is.
Yeah.
But the pension is like the average of your top five salaries.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's hard to get to. It's like 20 or 25 years or something. It's hard, but it's not. It's a nice pension.
That's the holy grail.
Like the NFL player pension is, don't get me wrong, I'm not like crying about it or anything, but it's not. It's not like the baseball pension. It's like my pension right now, I think, and it's not adjusted for inflation. You have to rely upon the goodwill of whoever the current NFLPA president is, that at the next CBA they're going to adjust for inflation.
Yeah.
But like right now, if they never adjusted for it, I think my pension after playing 10 years in the NFL If I waited until I was 65, I think it would be like $125,000 a year.
Wow. Okay, so yours isn't based on what you...
Like, I'm not it's nothing to sneeze at or anything, but compared to like baseball and some of the other pensions, it's not... It's not like, oh, you made it 3 years in the NFL, you're set for life. It's a little bit,
Is it based on what you made as a player, or is it the same for everybody?
No, it's the same. It's based exclusively on years of service.
Just tenure.
You get a certain amount of money per year that you played.
Gotcha,
I think it would be, but not adjusted for inflation, I think.
Okay.
If I wait until I'm 65, then it's like, I think it's $144,000 a year right
What I heard right there is, stop asking me for a loan until I'm 65, Sean. Stop texting me asking me for money till I'm 65.
That's an easy one for me. Like, I don't, hopefully, fingers crossed, I can start collecting at 55. I don't think I'm going to be hard up for money at any point, you know, five years from now. But I don't, I plan on working until I'm dead, just because whenever I stop working, I tend to, things go south for me very quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, Social Security, if it still exists, and my NFL pension, I'm not collecting those until I'm well into my 60s.
There you go. And I'm just going to
crash. Yeah, if I started at 55, I think I would get, I think I would get $5,500 a month if I started collecting
it. Which is like $65,000. Oh, yeah. No, wait, dude. Yeah, wait. I mean, even inflation, whatever, whatever. You know, like
you don't have to worry about like February 12th, 5 years from now, being like, hey, Sean.
Yeah, I don't need that.
The gravy train just arrived.
I don't need that. No,
see you later, bro.
Wait in that seat. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Wow, it's 9 o'clock hour already, man. Things are flying by. Hey, Mike Florio, now that the Manning cast ratings have gone back to where they were, Florio quickly has found a new co-celebra. Hey, you young quarterbacks out there, do not do this. We'll tell you what Florio's telling them not to do coming up next.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL match up like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the audience for the Manning cast, which had dipped to, I think, under 900,000 for the first game of the season. And Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, was beginning to question why ESPN would even invest in such a boondoggle to pay millions to Eli and Peyton and their guests to come on there, drawing a scant 892,000 viewers. Back to normal. Week two, 1.34 million viewers for Peyton and Eli. So
Wow.
Florio needs to go find some other some other cause that's a little more attainable than getting Peyton Manning thrown off the air at ESPN.
I do at least like that Florio was going after something that somebody might conceivably care about. When he starts getting into his little persnickety HOA rules stuff and everything, and it's not even like the rules on the field that he gets all up in arms about. It's like the way they're treating the salary cap offsets in 2027. But the notion that somehow Peyton Manning was manipulating the entire industry and wielding his big stick by having basically the equivalent of a podcast on ESPN2, that was the thing. Like, oh, he doesn't call the shots anyway, dude. He's on ESPN2. It's not. I don't think ESPN expected the alternate broadcast to turn into something that was like competing with the main broadcast. No. It's very much the way it's structured, and I'm guessing the way it was sold to ESPN is kind of experimental. You know, like, hey, we're going to do this thing. It's kind of the direction things are moving where it's more conversational than anything else. It'll feel like watching the internet on television, that we'll do it this way. And by the way, you guys are just Peyton Manning's going to handle all the production and everything. So it's a pretty simple P&L sheet. You're just like, okay, we pay you this and you deliver us the product and we get to sell advertising.
And they get to be associated with Peyton Manning, who is a good guy to be tied to PR-wise these days.
And I don't want to get too inside baseball on this, but when these sports writers start talking about the business side of things, they sound so stupid.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand the way advertising is actually sold. Like even like with Tom Brady, all right, you're not going to necessarily see a difference in the ratings, but it's a lot easier to sell Tom Brady to advertisers or Peyton Manning to advertisers than it is Brian Greasy.
Yes.
The ratings almost don't matter in that instance.
Okay, so Florio steps away from the business side of broadcasting now, and he's found a new cause to go. He's found a new hill to go die on, I guess. So Bryce Young may have had his career ruined because he was drafted by the most dysfunctional team in the NFL with the first overall pick 2 years ago, the Carolina Panthers. And so now Florio points out that Jed York of the 49ers several years ago gave the most depressing thing that you can say as a fodder to his fan base, which is like, hey, I own the team. You can't dismiss owners. You can't fire owners. Sorry, those are the facts. And since then, the 49ers have become a really good football team. But Jed York, I think, was pointing something out that several cities suffer from right now, which is the depression that this guy owns the team and he's not going anywhere. Carolina chief among those cities. Dave Tepper ain't going anywhere. He's brand new practically by NFL ownership standards. He's only been there a few years. So Florio points out that for quarterbacks, the team you get drafted by decides a lot of what your trajectory looks like. It's, in some ways, it's almost better to get drafted at the back end of the first round than the front end of the first round, because then at least you're going to organizations that have some stability. Florio says this, with Tepper, who forced Bryce Young onto his last coaching staff before forcing the new coaching staff to bench him. That's interesting. So he's saying that Tepper forced Bryce Young on Frank Reich. I could see that. Tepper's firmly in control of the team, likely looking for another incoming rookie quarterback to fall in love with before falling out of love with him again. It's high time, here we go, for college players who are finally making money to prepare to take a stand. The money Florio's talking about, of course, is NIL and now salaries they're getting from the schools. It happens rarely. It should happen often for quarterbacks. That first team shapes much of their career. That first team can ruin or dramatically delay the quarterback's chances to realize his potential. He points to the litany of quarterbacks that have failed with the New York Jets. The Panthers are on that same track. Incoming quarterbacks have more power than ever before. Their money is the source of it. They've earned plenty. They have or should have banked a lot of it. They can make it clear to the Panthers privately or if need be publicly that they will not sign a contract with the Panthers. Whoever's drafted by Tepper's team will sit out a year, live off his NIL money, probably earn more of it, and re-enter the draft next time around.
I think the interesting thing about that is, you know, we've seen it, like you said, rarely. Eli Manning is probably the most notorious or famous recent example of it. And it's not even that recent.
God, 2004. It's 2 decades ago. And John Elway was exactly 2 decades before that. Those are the big two.
Yeah, there are employed young men right now listening who don't have any memory of what I'm talking about. But, you know, Eli Manning did it, and there was criticism of it, and yet at the same time, I think it would be kind of like any prospect that chose to do that right now. The way I recall it was a lot of people were like, well, yeah, it makes sense that he wouldn't want to play for San Diego. It just, yeah, the Chargers are a mess of an organization. Nobody likes the Spanos family. That I think if a quarterback did choose to do it, it would just be a chance for more people to pile on Dave Tepper at this point. So I think there's more likelihood that it would happen just because I think public sentiment wouldn't even be an obstacle for the guy doing that. So we might see it. The one thing I wonder about with Tepper is, as you pointed out with Jed York, you know, we could talk about the Bengals organization being the same way. Owners don't always stay the same. The Bengals forever were known as a team that you just flat out did not want to go to. That there were probably more instances of free agents actually taking less money to not go to a team with the Bengals than any other team in football. And somewhere along the way, Mike Brown kind of changed the way he operated. Now, he did it very late in his NFL ownership. He's an old man. Yes. He's owned that team forever. So I think when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of how these things work, I think Dave Tepper is very capable of putting on the charm and talking to young prospects about the way it's going to be moving forward and everything. That I think whether it's Shedeur Sanders or anybody else, I think he's going to be able to. I think he's going to be able to put his best face forward and have that not happen.
Okay. Do not entice me like that.
Yes, I know. That's specifically why I chose Shedeur Sanders.
The Sanders family getting drafted to Carolina.
That's what I'm trying to will into existence.
Would be, and you know what? Just make Deion the coach. Make Deion the coach.
Oh, God.
Shedeur the quarterback. Find a draft pick where you can go get Travis Hunter as well. And let's just get the whole Colorado party together there, right there in the in the Appalachian Mountains there in Charlotte, North Carolina. Let's do it. That would be fun.
If there were an Andrew Luck level prospect or something, this draft, it would be. And I guess the next time the Panthers may or may not have the number one overall pick and there's a prospect who's that highly regarded,
yeah,
that would be the really interesting thing.
Yep. People are pointing out the Manning cast. Hey, the reason the numbers went way back up is because AT&T/DirecTV and Disney put their weapons down and settled over the weekend. I should point out, though, like the Manning cast numbers, the numbers for Monday Night Football overall were down by a small percent. They were down by about the percentage of people that didn't have access to the game.
Yeah.
The Manning cast numbers were way down compared to last year.
Yeah,
in week one.
Yeah, it wasn't accounted for just by that.
Even
working that into the equation, it was more than just whatever percentage was lost.
It was jarring.
It was
jarring. Someone said Belichick was awesome on there. I didn't get to watch any of it. But I did hear good things about Belichick on there.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, where, you know, Florio ignores all this stuff. He sounds like old media guy in a lot of ways, is that the actual social media side of it, of all the people putting their eyeballs on it throughout the week with the Belichick interviews and everything. I look at the Manning cast almost as like a cool podcast format.
Yeah.
And the people probably consume that recorded content way more than your typical live broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it keeps paying dividends on down the line for them.
It was fun. Like, I don't watch it. I've mentioned that. I just, like, now that they've got Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, I watch the regular feed all the time because that's kind of like, that's more like the Monday Night Football I grew up on, you know, just the regular feed. But yes, that's a great point, Seth, about going back and watching. Somebody put up a video of Peyton, Eli, and they had Matt Ryan on down the stretch of that game. And they had the three of them while the Falcons game-winning drive was going on. That was really cool to watch the three of them, you know, to watch Peyton react because a guy doesn't get out of bounds, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, watch Peyton especially. Eli doesn't seem like he cares so much about the little mistakes, largely because he probably made most of those mistakes on game-winning drives. But Peyton, to watch Peyton react and maybe even overreact to some of the little things that go on, little glitches and mistakes that go on a potential game-winning drive is really cool.
It's really a shame that he's not in Tom Brady's role, because I think that's the stuff you're going to get out of Peyton Manning
yeah.
that I don't think you're probably... Maybe, you know what? I think Brady will start to show that side of himself, because he's shown the grumpy old man side of himself in interviews.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's not afraid to talk about, in generalities, he'll talk about how quarterbacks operate these days. It isn't real quarterbacking, et cetera, et cetera. He just needs to get to that point where he's doing it within a game and where he's showing his emotion and coming from a very informed place. That's where Brady could be really good. The technical and analytical stuff, it only carries so much juice when you're in the moment and you really just want to just either have a guy confirm what you feel or a guy that angers you because of what he's saying. And that Brady's just still, he's trying to get comfortable in his role right now. Yeah. I think it's going to change between now and week 18 with Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think so too. We got to watch him this week because he did the Cowboys game during that early window where you and I didn't have to do radio. So I was watching that game. I'm like, oh, he's pretty good. Like, I don't know that he's $37 million good, but he's not, he's fine.
A boat race is kind of a tough game to, for a novice broadcaster.
Yeah.
Boat races are difficult because there's only so many ways you can say, okay, these guys are getting destroyed.
Well, although Brady's been on the right side of a lot of them, he does have that perspective. Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Super Bowl odds are out. Man, the Texans are living in a strata we have not seen in a long, long time. And what are their chances early on here? What are the chances of them making the playoffs? What are the chances of them extending their lead this weekend on the entire division again? We'll get into that as we roll on here towards the top of the hour. In the Loop will jump in with us here shortly. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast. I don't know when the last time the Texans lived in this lofty spot on the odds board. Odds for the Super Bowl right now. Number one, Kansas City Chiefs, they are plus 475. So about 5-1. You risk 100, you win $475. Number two, San Francisco 49ers, plus 650. You risk 100 bucks, you win $650. Number three, by themselves, on the odds board, to win Super Bowl 59, the Houston Texans. 10-1. 10-1. To win the Super Bowl are the Houston Texans right now, just ahead of Buffalo, who they play in 2.5 weeks, who are 11-1, and then Detroit and Philly, 12-1. Detroit and Philly, 12-1, and Philly, it feels like the environment there is about what it was at the end of last year, based on how the last 2 minutes of that Monday Night Football game went.
I think part of that, too, you know, when you start talking about, there's always a difference between whatever the actual power rankings are versus what are your chances to win the Super Bowl. Some of that, a lot of it starts to be, okay, what does the schedule look like? What is the likelihood that they make the playoffs? And with the AFC South being in the dismal situation that it is right now, and the Texans being up, having a 2-0 record, regardless of what that says about the team itself, the situation has gotten that much better for the Texans.
Yeah.
So their potential to be in the tournament to begin with, and then also to have a good seeding within the tournament, it's that much better right now. To say nothing of whether the Titans or Colts or Jaguars even look like good teams, it's a better position. Like, the over-under for the Texans now is at 10.5. wins on the season.
Oh, is it really? It moved, huh?
I checked it yesterday.
Okay. So that's about where, I mean, 11-6 is what I was saying before the year. So far, so good.
It helps too that Anthony Richardson was awful in his second game too, because now you know that, oh, okay, the Texans face that team again, a team they already beat, and the quarterback really looks awful.
Yeah, I'm merely pointing these out just because, one, it's fun when your team is in this position. And two, it does illustrate, at least early on, the wide margin between the Texans and the rest of the division. But what I'm about to point out, I will point out by saying that there was a point last year where the Jacksonville Jaguars were like 97.3% to make the playoffs. They completely, not only did they not win the division, they completely missed the postseason because they went from 8-3 to 9-8, and they lost to the Titans in week 18. Allowing the Texans to step in and win the division. But right now, 2 weeks in, the Texans are minus 300 to win the AFC South. They have a 75% chance, according to the odds makers, of winning the division right now. I'm getting too comfy, you know?
Yeah.
So, Chiefs are the only one. Chiefs Chiefs have they're the only ones with better odds to win their own division than the Texans, minus 400 for the Kansas City Chiefs right now. So yeah, the Texans living in the living in the penthouse right now when it comes to Super Bowl odds, 10-1. When the weekend ends, Seth, or as Chandler Rome likes to say, when we wake up on Monday, what do you think this division looks like? Are we going to be handed a division? Are we going to have a division when we wake up on Monday where the Texans are 3-0 and everybody else is still looking for their first win? And I'll tell you who everybody's playing right here. Chicago is at Indy. Indy's a small favorite, as we talked about that game earlier. Green Bay is at Tennessee. Tennessee is a small favorite in that game, -3. Malik Willis revenge tour. I kind of like that storyline.
Yes.
And then Jacksonville. Yes. Jacksonville is in Buffalo for Monday Night Football, and the Bills are a somewhat substantial favorite, 5.5 points against Trevor Lawrence and the Jags. Do we come in on Monday to 3-0? 0-3. What do you think?
I think that Chicago at Indy, I'm fascinated by, because I do think that Indianapolis's defense has weaknesses, especially against the run. And I think if there's one thing the Bears need to do right now, it's really establish a run game. And I think they have a chance to do that versus the Colts. But I think Anthony Richardson is going to absolutely get eaten up and spit out by that Bears defense. Mm. I think it is going to be really, really ugly for Anthony Richardson. So even though Indianapolis is favored in that game at home, if that is even a home field advantage, those stupid pasty inbreds up there and that godforsaken wasteland.
Right.
I feel good about Indy losing that game.
Okay.
The Malik Willis revenge tour is a hard one for me, because I feel like there were a lot of people in the NFL that were still excited to see Malik Willis a couple years ago, because they had a national game of some sort, but we had already seen Malik Willis, and we knew, like, ooh.
Remember that? In his rookie year, he came into a game against the Texans that the Titans won. It was here at NRG Stadium. And he threw one pass in the second half. One.
They wouldn't, and it was a bad one. It should have been flagged for illegal downfield pass, right? Or his foot was out of bounds, I think.
Something, yeah. Like, his foot was out of bounds.
It wasn't even a legitimate pass.
Yes.
They took the ball as much out of his hands as you possibly could for the guy that's taking the snap every single down.
Yeah.
Except when they used Derrick Henry at quarterback. And
yeah.
So, and yet, different guy, different system, and going against the Tennessee. Yeah, I feel like karma and the football gods are going to deliver Green Bay a win in this one.
Okay.
In Tennessee.
Yeah.
I like that.
Do we still count on Will Levis doing one cataclysmically dumb thing every week in games as well?
I don't know why you're being so generous and saying one. I would say at least three stupid things. Yeah.
So you think Green Bay maybe over Tennessee, and then look.
Green Bay made Brock Purdy look like an idiot.
Right.
You think Will Levis is going to come out there looking like a Rhodes Scholar?
Yeah. Jacksonville at Buffalo. Buffalo -5.5 in that one.
As far as gambling goes, I'd be uncomfortable with -5.5. Although it's in Buffalo. But yeah, I feel pretty confident about Buffalo beating Jacksonville.
Okay, so you're right now on the side of, we come in, well, I'm assuming you're picking the Texans against the Vikings too. Maybe I shouldn't assume that. That's a close spread as well. But 3-0 and then 3-0-3 teams on Monday.
Yeah, if I were gambling, I can't do this. I'm not, I've come around on gambling, but I still have the home. I can't actually. It's tricky.
Yeah.
I feel like the spread is a little too much for the Texans right now.
I agree.
On the road.
Yeah.
I like them in the game, but if I had to gamble on it, I wouldn't bet it with that spread.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I do feel confident about the Texans overall.
Here is
I just don't think it's going to be a high-scoring affair necessarily.
Yep. Here is D'Amico Ryans on C.J. Stroud this past Sunday, on C.J. rallying the team.
Yeah, C.J. just has to do his part, I think. You know, a lot of people talk about rallying the troops and all those things. Everybody has to just own up and do their job. Like, man up, do your job, do whatever you're tasked to do on particular plays. Like, everybody just do it to the best of your ability. And CJ has to play his game, right? But it's not all on CJ or all on one person to get everyone going, right? Everybody just has to have that ownership. Everybody has to have that mindset that, you know, whatever it takes for us to win, they're ready and willing to do it on each and every play.
Yeah, I think the thing there, especially maybe from D'Amico's perspective as a player, and where maybe this helps, is that he knows sometimes when you start trying to turn everything into an Instagram reel and make it as dramatic as possible, that it's not always the best recipe for playing sound football.
Yeah.
So in this team, where this team has shot themselves in the foot continually in these first two games, where the Texans, they've squandered some opportunities for convincing victories by making mistakes on their own. You don't want guys out there feeling like they have to have a superhuman effort.
Yep.
And I think likewise, it doesn't take some dramatic speech by C.J. Stroud, you know, where he makes people cry in the locker room or something to win the football game. Just go out and do your job and find that balance between playing passionate football, but also just trusting your teammates and knowing that like you're going to play a bunch of these games this year. Just go out and do your job.
We actually have a Woj bomb from ESPN. About
a Woj football bomb?
A Woj bomb about Woj. ESPN insider, NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski, who, you know, I know media news hits a little different than just mainstream sports stuff, but I think a lot of our audience is definitely, I would imagine, familiar with Adrian Wojnarowski. He's the Adam Schefter of the NBA, so to speak. Like, he's the guy that, he is the breaking news guy in the NBA. Not anymore. He is retiring from ESPN and has agreed to become the general manager of the men's basketball program at his alma mater,
St. Bonaventure.
St. Bonaventure, yeah. Yeah.
No, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
How about that?
That's crazy.
Yeah. Now, so.
Oh, this is a weird move.
It's a weird move, but look, Woj, and we can bring John Lopez, who lived in the same ecosystem as Adrian Wojnarowski for many years as a writer. And Reggie Adatula, of course.
Did not live in the same
ecosystem. Did not, nor did I. So you and I are on the same page along with Seth there. But Woj, this is what I would say. Just Woj he's my age because he graduated from high school literally 15 minutes from me. Same year.
I never knew that.
He's from Bristol, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And so we're the same age. So we've chatted a few times. When he used to be with Yahoo and I was with Yahoo Sports Radio, I had him on my show quite a bit. And he's made a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been getting the Schefter-type salaries from ESPN. So I'm guessing he's been good with his money. And he is not only an alum of St. Bonaventure, a diehard fan of their basketball program. This is a passion project for him probably, you know?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Sean, I have a place up there. That's my wife's, very close to my wife's hometown.
Yes.
In the era of NIL and for a team like Bonaventure that's made stabs at national at times here and there, it is a unique environment because it is a tiny Catholic school in a small, small town that is literally hours away from any kind of big city or anything like that. It's not an economically prosperous area. And this is a challenge.
Yeah.
In trying to,
I respect it.
This is not an easy job he's taken just with that he'll just be able to come in with his big swinging name. And wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I feel like it's impressive that he's taken this on.
Yeah. And
I'm fascinated by the continuation of college sports moving to this general manager role as well.
Yeah.
Like that. That's
GM.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what a lot of these athletic departments are going to have.
My immediate reaction is obviously, you know, we lose. I feel we lose as consumers. Because I'm with what Seth said. It's and what you actually, passion project, big job, but he's got the opportunity. I'm with what Reggie said, you know, the whole fascination with general managers and NIL and all that stuff. He's going to be big in that, I'm guessing. But we ultimately lose.
Yeah,
because he was the best at what he did, and it's another commentary on the industry.
Well, he set us up. Like he gave us Shams Charania.
He gave us Shams is his guy. I wonder if there's his guy, to the extent that now over the last couple of years it's almost like they've been dueling pianos trying to outdo one another. I wonder if I wonder if Team Shams has taken a victory last day. We retired Woj. Okay.
Look, we've talked about this, asymmetrical warfare in the age of NIL. There's going to be teams that don't have the same financial resources that other teams do. And like as I laid out, Bonaventure has some checks against it in raising money from local business people or anything like that. But Wojnarowski was as good as what he did because he has all these relationships with really famous and influential people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how does he leverage that into an advantage over some of the blue blood programs, or not even blue bloods, but other teams that they compete with there in the Atlantic 10? It's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
It's a cool story, yeah. He's got a plan, yeah. I promise you that, knowing what little I know about him. He's got a plan for sure. How we feeling, gentlemen?
Feeling great. I'm just still processing this. I think he'll be successful.
Yeah.
Simply because of the not just the connections, but with NIL and especially basketball, you don't need a lot of players.
No.
You need like three players.
Well, he can sell the to prospective players. Yeah. He can sell the contacts he has at the NBA level of getting them in and whatnot. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, and I imagine that scouting ends up being a little bit easier as well with his connections in, you know, development and those types of things.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm really interested.
Oh,
like,
yeah, the development side. Yeah, that's actually really interesting.
Yeah, okay. The thought that I started thinking of when Lopez said we lose is obviously the newsbreaker of that sort. Shams is big, but he seems to be more of a player side source guy.
Coach is agents.
I'm interested who then steps into that role of agent side source guy.
Yeah, there's a void now. There's a lot.
But we're good. I'm good. I know Reggie's good.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we're good. It's hump day, and we're looking.
Don't speak for me. I'm not doing great at all.
Doing great. He's in a mood. We're looking forward now.
Okay, yeah, us too.
Yeah, we're looking forward
us
now.
Us too, yeah. So it's Minnesota time, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever the hell went on in San Diego last night with the Astros. We will talk about that. That was some wild
stuff. The OnlyFans things that were happening at the plate?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, Rex Ryan loved that game. All right, Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you, Sean.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We're done. We're out of time.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.